This is a production of Cornell University.
Student Assembly Meeting, February 18th, 2010.
Cross-disciplinary nature that you need to take out of courses at college. This actually supports that long term. We believe it will actually break down some of the barriers or challenges that we have right now that we see that happening from a financial planning perspective from the company. So, do I think it actually changes anything? You when it actually is implemented? No, I don't think immediately. I think it actually enhances the institution longer term. Because again, it does recognize that on the recommendation, I'm going to share responsibility. So that's a big change from a financial planning standpoint for you to do stuff. I don't think it's certainly not a negative change. But again, that's going to be the amount of money, which is when you hold a separate issue and enrollment money. So we're going to stop there and just make sure that that point makes sense to you. If there are any questions, I can transfer.
Sure. First on speaker, this is Vipi Kumar.
So I just had a question about, so if you centralize the money flow, I mean, how does that affect, I guess, so currently if you take, a course outside your college, the college distributes money back, from your home college to the college you take a course in, right? So if there's a centralization, how does that affect, I guess in the long term, the sort of incentives colleges have to offer maybe duplicate courses, things like that.
So that's a great question. So currently, when you get to college, and of course, it really depends on what college you're coming from, so whether there's a settled law. So between arts and sciences and engineering, for example, there is no money that flows back and forth. The amount of allocation that the provost gives to those colleges at the beginning of the year, it is assumed that it accounts for all that activity back and forth. If you were in college, a contract college, a large college, a community college, there is a mechanism that we use to cost that on a front hour day and work it settled up. And it's a partial settlement right now, it's not a full settlement. But there is a costing out on that process and moving the fund annually to account for that. So we have two different bases right now. Kind of incomplete, so you have it right now. So going forward, we would like to make it the same basis. What we would like to do is have the dialogue around students be able to take courses in other colleges, what makes sense there, who's offering what, to be based on academic reasons, not based on financial reasons. So there is an incentive in the system right now that if you can teach more, then you can attract more dollars. I don't know if that's the best thing for these students. It depends on for what reason it's being done. We want to be careful that we have to try to apply this to the government avenues right now. But put it in the system, you can see some odd behaviors occur and actually the risk of odd decision making that's for financial reasons, not for academic reasons. So what we believe by putting everyone on a common platform that it leads it there's a greater chance that what we're doing makes an academic decision and not just being driven by internal competition for resources.
Okay. Thank you.
One of the things you said that really resonated, I think, on your program that was shared responsibility in the motto of how to identify this farm. And I was also wondering, you shared responsibility, and I think that this depends a little bit to something called shared government, where all the schools kind of look out for one another and ensure that, if you're not, if one school isn't overspending while another school is being frugal and careful. Recently, the number of
long-term process of moving, allocating resources on campus. high of 1,000. That's an early anything I'm talking about here, where they did much not more than that. And in the chapter before, it hasn't even been accepted yet. So whether all this stuff happens to the fifth question asked about the recent recovery of resources, that's a one-time action, something that we don't ever expect to do again in response to the current fiscal situation. And it was disproportionate when you look at a lot of it. The measure we looked at, though, was trying to understand, our objective was to minimize the impact. We had to take that resources. We had to cover some deficit, and we need to move the institution forward. And by taking back some of these resources, we actually need to reduce our deficit quicker. So it was a strategic decision to do this and a requirement from a financial planning standpoint that we actually have some resources. Our objective was to minimize the impact, negative impact of doing that. It has a negative impact. We pulled resources out of the control of the it can never be recovered. So it does have a negative impact. But what we would have, we looked at units that had actually grown in resources in recent years. And did not get invested in those resources specific programmatic areas. So if we did it proportionately across campus, it would have had an impact on program. We would have been taking from resources that people had used to build current programs right now. And we would have seen programs go away after we've done that. Our goal was, by doing it in the manner we did, we think we minimize that. We looked at recent years' growth, colleges that had the most growth in the last 1, 2, 4, 5 years. And that kind of growth, this is money that was balance that yes, we're busy incorporated into ongoing programmatic activity. So by grabbing it, certainly was disproportionate. But in terms of impact on campus and on the education on campus, we don't think it really was. So that's kind of the case. It was a difficult decision. We think it was very strategic in the way we did it, but I wouldn't argue that it was very tactical. But we really do believe it was very strategic for what this program is trying to do.
Is there a second part to your presentation? Because we have a long list, yeah. So we'll let you finish before
yeah.
we continue.
So I'm going to go on for the budget.
Yeah, go ahead.
And then talk about administrative cost savings.
Sure.
So administrative cost savings, this is an effort we have underway called the Initiative Coordination Office. It's formal quite a lot, but the point of it is we are seeking to save significant dollars. Our goal is up to $90 million over the next 5 years. We're in a phase right now of testing that, but we don't know whether that $90 million will actually be achievable yet. We're evaluating it. But the point of it is we do have a budget problem. We continue. We have a $68 million deficit in the current year, is what our budget deficit is. Trustees approved for a budget this year. If we do nothing, that deficit will grow next year. That's not acceptable. We do have to take some action. We are going through an effort to look at administrative areas of the university. So when I use that term, I can include things like facilities management, information technology management, how we deliver services, including also financial management, processing, and resources. All activities that are really outside of the delivery of courses in research and public service missions. So when I use the term administrative, I mean it quite broadly. But we are launched an effort. We've launched several different review areas. I won't take the time, unless you want me to right now, to go through those areas. You can find them on the reimagining website, cornell.edu/reimagining. It will describe briefly the procurement review, the facilities review, activity, et cetera. But I want you to understand that why we're doing this is we do think if we can realize the savings in those areas, we minimize the impact of budget cuts that actually directly impact that. I don't think it will eliminate those actions. Remember, we get back to a balanced budget. So in my example, what we're talking about is trying to get back to a financial equilibrium, a balanced budget for campus. That still doesn't give us the resources that all the academic departments really desire to move the university forward. So you'll see certain within an academic unit, each department chairs prioritize a different activity. To create some budget flexibility on their own. From an institutional standpoint, that we're looking at these administrative cost savings as an effort to really minimize the impact on the academic program as we work to balance the budget. little more detail if you want me to go following your questions. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll go into questions next. Yeah. Representative Brock.
Hi. Thank you for coming. I'm not sure if you could speak to this, but it seems that this plan of pooling tuition is kind of disconnected to the recent tuition increases. There were 4.4% and then there were 8% in certain schools. And I'm wondering if you foresee in the future that by doing this, maybe we could standardize the increases in tuition. Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, I can comment on that. But again, I'd like to separate the two. The pooling issue is a different discussion. I can talk about tuition increases. The common increase for all undergraduate students is the tuition went up $1,700. So that's the common. The tuition increase for all students, undergraduate students, was $1,700. On a percentage basis, it's different because for resident students in Calhoun, College, and IMR, New York State, in those three colleges, their base is lower. So I can't recall exactly what that base is. But it's about $15,000 less than the out-of-state tuition in those colleges as well as the tuition in Argentina, which Architecture and Engineering. Our tuition planning approach has been to recognize and believe that the cost of education goes up the same across campus. So if you think about tuition, rate adjustment each year. We tend to think about it on a dollar level, not on a percent level, and we do believe that that percentage goes up the same, that dollar level goes up the same for all of us. As I said, a $1,700 increase for everyone, it did calculate out 4.5% of the college tuition. Those with the higher tuition made 7.9% of those with lower tuition.
So you think, just to follow up, you think that this won't necessarily change that, that they'll continue to go by the dollar amount, even though percentage-wise it hurts those state schools?
I think the budget model conversation, the one about pooling the tuition, it is separate from the tuition rate and the cost. They're really two separate processes.
And this pool of funding, does the provost have the final say in distributing or allocating these funds, or is there some sort of system of checks and balances between the provost and the deans, and is power more distributed?
Yeah, what we're expecting is to be a methodology developed that everyone will understand. So everyone, the provost, and more publicly as well. There will be a standard methodology that somehow weighs how much is based on college enrollment, how much is based on college teaching, how much should it be weighted based on the type of instruction, the type of lab work. But the methodology would be known and would be stated. It wouldn't change every year. So that, again, folks in colleges can plan, like the departments can plan based on the how those factors get weighted out, that's going to be studied. If this approach is adopted, that will be studied. And put in place over the next year.
No, I don't think I made it a little more fun.
I don't believe the budget model is going to have significant impact on our graduate students. I think it will have an impact on how we do financial planning in our graduate colleges. So it's a difference for our students. Our view is not that we have the students in our graduate colleges. It's how they can see resources and how they can plan. You really don't know the answer to this. You're sitting in the meeting room right now where you're playing president's role. Everybody's trying to understand this. The budget model doesn't create resources in any way, shape, or form. It's just a matter of how distributed what we already have. And so folks are trying to zero sum game. Folks are trying to understand who will get more, who will get less. And I honestly don't have a perspective on that. We haven't done the planning to do that. So all we put forward is a framework in which we think it's the best way to manage the versus receive model. So I if I said something the other day, I didn't say the word. Let me get to the first question that I could about the advisory group and that tuition for the jobs will determine you which is important for the contact. So for the advisory group, the other problems that decide who's on that and how it's going to be for that. And I just really don't know how I'm thinking about that. See, our from the task force standpoint, our point was that you should be a representative group. And what we thought was important was the provost to make sure that the set of funds, the university support pool, that campus understands what the priorities are for the use of that and how it gets actually distributed. It hasn't done a very transparent and open process that was a big theme in our deliberation, was to make sure that transparency is very good. We thought it was important to have some sort of advisory group.
Well, we'll move on.
Can you talk about the pool for a second?
Sure, quick.
Okay, so the other big concept in the report was the formation of this thing called the University Support Pool, what our terminology was. We believe very strongly that to manage the institution and really long-term forward progress, the provost needs a set of resources. He or she can invest in the institution for institutional initiatives to cut across colleges, and they can be of a greater scale than any individual need might take a risk of taking on. And so to do that, we need some sort of resource. We need that we believe that it's appropriate for all the different graduate students to contribute in some manner to the school. That's why we talk about it in tax and tuition dollars, but we also talk about it in tax. Again, from a framework, we didn't set a taxation rate. It could be differential tax for different revenues. But our point was that all the activities that were in funds to the institution benefit from the fact that we're under the benefit of Cornell University. And that there is the advancement of the university as a whole is different than every individual college trying to advance itself. If there are initiatives that really are broader than any single college, or and you can cite examples, areas in which probably if you left to a single need to invest in activities, they don't have the resources or the budget flexibility to be able to take on some risk to move the institution forward. The provost will conduct that, and that's why we thought that having some set of resources available to the provost. That's what we're doing.
Okay.
So, yes, sir.
Yeah, we'll have two more questions. Representative Gitlin.
Are there any laws or stipulations that come with the New York State funds that might hinder or prevent the university from pulling the greater university administration from pulling the money?
We actually have a very clear stewardship responsibility to make sure that the funds offered by New York State stay and are used within the contract. So there's a framework here that we put forth that tries to deal with it. That's actually one of the reasons why we have a very complex budget model right now. We believe that within the framework that we've adopted, that we can meet all those stewardship requirements that are actually our stewardship requirements, and draw a hard line on how we use those funds, and we will certainly meet those for whatever reason. We think that we have, that within the framework that we propose, we can meet that.
The
VP Andrews.
All right, so just because I think we're limited in time here, I guess I'd like to push you on one, the area of the pooling of resources, because just from, I know Nikhil Kumar and I took a class in the economics of the university, and one of the major reasons for pooling resources from the central administration is to try and create efficiencies between overlapping departments in the individual colleges. And so how do you project the university is going to change in an academic sense from this pooling of resources? And then will student input be taken into account when these changes are being taken place? Though we understand it's a financial point of view, so administrators obviously have, you know, the greater say, but if student input will be taken in the projection of, you know, in 10 years from now, how is student input going to be taken into how the university looks?
It's a great question. Obviously, we'll have to trouble answering it for some of the but give you the perspective on my mind. To the question of, you know, the academic department and whether the overlapping programs, to that question, our task force believes that this conversation actually becomes intense. We actually can have that, and we have it from an academic discussion standpoint. Where is it being taught? Are we teaching it? Should we be teaching it in many places? And how do we actually organize this curriculum? Think about it as a whole. We actually believe that this supports that conversation. I don't know if that conversation will actually launch. That's a different conversation from the budget model. But to the extent of whether we can even have that as a reasonable discussion, I think this budget model will support that and allow that conversation to occur from an academic standpoint, not consensus by direct linkage to like teaching course at $1. And it separates the two. So I think from our task force perspective, we thought the framework was really, it could be really very valuable. In allowing these discussions to occur, because they want to occur between provost and dean, so I'm not going to profess what the projector that they will or will not occur. But over time, I would expect that it would, and we believe that this budget model will allow those conversations to go in the most reasonable manner possible from an academic planning perspective. Again, recognizing that in our current world, the dean would be entering those conversations from a variety of perspectives. Some would actually realize that a teaching course that will feed my resources change. Others that take a teaching course, they don't feed their resources change directly. And that's just an enable platform in which to have a discussion. So that's why we believe this is the right framework to enable this discussion. To your question, the other point on will there be student input into that process? Again, that's when you project, I don't even know if the conversation will occur. But recognizing what the university is about is delivering education to what the students want. I think the students are driven what programs they teach, where student interests fall, what courses students are taking, what degree programs are they enrolling in. That drives long term where we're going. So I think absolutely. At the moment, I might be used to that, and I just can't discuss that. But long term, absolutely. You see programs moving, and it's just, you know, 10 years ago. Why? Because this is interesting. So, I hope that helps.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, it does. And in the future, you know, in developing this model, I guess if there could be, you know, if you can sort of lobby maybe for some sort of feedback or suggestion mechanism for students, that would be great. Thank you for coming to speak with us today, and thanks for your time. Okay, Allison, can you call the roll?
Here.
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 Here. Yep. Jalisha is unexcused.
Here.
He's here. Excuse. Yep. Onyx. All right. Is he? Oh, he's here. He's here. Are we good? Okay, if anyone from the audience would like to address the essay on any item that is currently not on the agenda, please step forward now. Okay, we'll go to an elections update by DOE Juno.
Yeah, we have 36 candidates in the upcoming election. They're blurbly posted tomorrow at the mandatory campaign meeting. So it's going to be a good election. I'm excited.
Okay, give it up for DOE Junoids for spreading the word, and thanks to the Office of Assemblies for getting the applications ready. JAMIC update by VP Kumar.
So we'll be heading to the meeting of the Joint Assembly's Multicultural Issues Committee, not next week, but a week after that. You know, a couple of the main issues we want to talk about is the bias-related incident protocol, as well as some follow-up to some of the actions that we took last semester as an essay. So if anybody's interested, I'll email out the meeting date and time and place and everything. But if anybody from the community is interested, just feel free to send me an email and, you know, we'll get you on the list. Thank you.
Any questions? University Strategic Plan update by VP Bezon Kumar. You put it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, that's
a
brown bag?
Yeah. Just see.
We have brown bag.
Okay, so Nikhil and I at the leadership breakfast on Tuesday heard from Ed Lawler and Provost Fox. We were not joined by Vincent Asa, who overslept. We heard about basically sort of an overview of the reimagining process and the strategic planning process and sort of how things are going from here. Because obviously right now we have sort of collected a giant strategic plan. It's about 80-100 pages long that has recommendations for each college and everything kind of going forward. And so right now the administration is in the process of sort of gathering a wide variety of feedback from really everyone that this plan affects. And we'll be holding a series of brown bag lunches coming up. Peggy just sent an email, Peggy Beach, to all of you guys about that a couple days ago. So go in there, and we're definitely going to be doing more the next few days as an e-board to kind of organize the essay, to attend some of these lunches and really give our feedback about the reimagining process. So stay tuned. Is that good?
Yeah.
Also, as you know, VP Latella has been collecting responses and compiling them to sort of have a comprehensive essay response. So if you haven't submitted your portion, be sure to email it to him. We have a Public Service Committee update by Representative Gettler.
A few things. First of all, we had our first meeting last week and we sort of hit the ground running. A few announcements from it. First of all, the Student Assembly is participating in the Relay for Life fundraising event that is taking place in a little less than 2 weeks. And basically, it's sort of a relay where, you know, we're walking around Bartell's track and raising money for cancer research. And so I'm going to send out an email later tonight about how to register, and if everyone on the SA can register, that would be excellent. Secondly, we're going to begin going through different service organizations on campus, and we're going to be sort of soliciting them. So that's going to be an ongoing process in the coming months. And then finally, there are a few positions on the committee that we are looking to fill. So if anyone, there is going to be an informal application process even though it's an ad hoc, it's an assembly committee. So if anyone has any names that they're thinking, you know, people who are passionate committee and who would want to serve on the committee, just send me an email.
Have you already made the student assembly team for Relay for Life? Or?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
I'll send out the link.
Okay. Next up is class council's elections poster policy changes by VP Basil. That's resolution 53 in your packet.
Mm.
Any questions or a motion? Representative Desai.
Call for acclamation.
There's been a call for acclamation. There's been a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, the resolution passes. All right. Is everyone ready?
We're ready.
All right. Resolution 44, the non-discrimination clause, by Representative Bachman and Danzig.
Is there another...
No, I got it. Yeah. We have an extra. Five minutes, yep. Wait, you can't. Talk to the mic. The microphone isn't on, I don't think.
Alright, yeah. So, okay. It's the third time we are publicly engaging with the state on the anti-discrimination clause. One step by complimenting all of you and complimenting the coordination of the group's work, the judicial administrator, and the student activities office for engaging in serious dialogue and staying in contact with me throughout this process. This resolution calls for a change in Cornell University policy. It intends that we be free from discrimination with regard to the full rights of management, including the right to hold leadership positions. Now, based on my discussions with clergy and others, it seems that the main objection to the resolution concerns religious groups. The truth is, what we want at this assembly is not very different from what religious student organizations want. We both want diversity. We both want an active student life. We both want good organizations, and we both want to provide students with an opportunity to come together. In order to achieve our shared goal of providing an active student life, it is important for the university to have its own doctrines. Currently, the university doctrine takes a stand on discrimination with regard to membership. We think it should do more. We think that the full life of membership should not be withheld because of students' race, gender, sexual orientation, and so on. Now, this university doctrine might clash with religious doctrine from time to time, and that's okay. This does not mean that the student organization needs to change their religion, and it certainly does not mean that they need to change their beliefs as individuals. It just means that they need to find middle ground if they want us to recognize them as part of the Cornell community. These are student organizations, and they receive student money, and they are supposed to be run and organized by students themselves. If a religious student organization wants to receive funding, then they have to compromise. They need to adhere to university policy. So, for example, as the policy stands right now prior to the passage of this resolution, a religious organization that believes women shouldn't be allowed to participate as members would have to adjust something, or they would not become a Cornell registered organization. Now, these policies and this anti-discrimination clause are meant to promote an open and active student life. They are meant to provide protection to those who are most likely to be discriminated against. If this assembly and religious organization on campus want Cornell student life to succeed and grow and better, then we must have this. We must ensure that Chi Alpha Christian Fellowship controversy never repeats itself. Now, I remember sitting in this room right over there. As that day transfer representative found the word. I remember when Chris Donovan came here to tell us a story. Donovan was a leader, studying the Bible like a good student, and when he was finally able to realize his own sexuality, he lost. And I wouldn't be doing my job if I let this discrimination go on for one more day. We are better than that. We can make sure that that never happens again. It is our duty to act. And the organizations that absolutely desire an uninhibited right to discriminate against certain students will just have to compromise. I'm not asking them to change their beliefs. I just want the organization to receive university recognition to conform to our values.
That's right.
That students will not have to endure discrimination.
There's just much more
education.
Yeah, sure. So before we open it up to the speaker's list, I just like to tell any audience members who wish to be recognized, just raise your hands and you'll be added to that. Also, I forgot to pass out a sign-up sheet for optional essay hours that I had mentioned before while the debate's going on. If you can pass this around and sign up your name if you would like to hold office hours in Live Cafe. First on the speaker's list is VP Bates.
So I think that this resolution obviously is something where and this whole issue is something where I've sort of varied wildly in terms of where I've stood at different times, really because of how complicated this issue is. What I see in front of us today is Resolution 44 is an entirely different issue than we started out last year with Chi Alpha with as an assembly. And I think that by Chris's remarks last year when he brought this in front of the SA, this is absolutely not the direction that he would have wanted this to go in. He was very clear throughout the entire process. He didn't want it to be punitive on the group. And I think that what Representative Brockman has just said today about what this resolution will do to student groups and student group independence really reveals what a vast change in an authoritarian direction this is shifting Cornell. And it really is something that I think that anyone who's considering voting yes on has to really take a step back and look at this and think exactly what you're getting yourself into. Think about what Andrew just said. Christian men's organization is now outlawed. Women have to be part of this organization. And every single organization's beliefs, what did you say at the meeting?
Christian men's organization, you're not allowing women to be members, and that organization is in violation of the policy that already exists.
Basically what you're saying right now is any group of like-minded individuals can't form if there is any sense of any of these violations that exist. And so basically what you're doing here too is you're saying that not only can this group not receive funding, but this is looking to basically for punitive damages on club members for harassment, discrimination, etc., based on any of these qualifications. What you're doing is you're basically putting religious freedoms and putting, not just religious freedoms, but the other thing to keep in mind is that, you know, what you said, any organization that holds, you know, what you would describe as extremist views has to temper it to what you describe as the ideal, the societal norm. So, you know, a very left-wing or a very white right-wing group that might discriminate based on, you know, any of these things, you're saying has to be kind of shifted into moderation. And really, I think all along, this is not the right way to get across what we want. What do we want as a society? What do we want as a Cornell student body? We want people to not be discriminated against, first and foremost. Second, what we want is we want like-minded individuals who want to form a group based on their beliefs to be able to get together in a room and talk about what they want to talk about and do what they want to do, so long as that doesn't infringe other people's rights. Frankly, I want really right-wing, really left-wing student groups. I want people to sort of have the Socialist Workers' Party, the Green Party on campus. I want there to be strict conservative Muslims, strict conservative Christians, strict conservative Jews, as well as liberal Jews, liberal Christians, liberal Muslims. All these different people can have their organizations on campus where they can find like-minded individuals where, you know, they have things that they believe in. I think that, you know, when we look at Chi Alpha and the organizations they had, this was an organization that, I don't think anyone would be hesitant to say, had very conservative Christian views. And these views can be very explicitly and clearly said, we do not believe in the following things, as they're stated in the Bible. Premarital sex, drugs, alcohol, homosexuality, there might have been others. But Chris knew right all along he was going into an organization that had these tenets as part of what they believed in. So when it comes down to him being discriminated against, I have a huge problem with us as universities saying to this organization, which is in effect what you're doing, you're not allowed to believe in this as an organization. Yeah, they can believe in it as a person, and they can believe in it as a group of people. Well, we're not going to recognize them as a university for having legitimate beliefs. And I think that's a huge problem for us to be stepping down as an authoritarian body and saying that to student groups. So I really encourage all of you guys to take a step back today and really look at whether this is the right way to approach this problem, which is discrimination. I think that judgment and conversation is the best way to approach these kinds of issues. I think it's absolutely right for us as a student assembly to have the ability to look at these groups and say, I think what you did is wrong. But for us to say universally,
for us to say universally, you're not allowed to say this, I don't think is right.
All right. So yeah, give him some time to respond.
I just want to say a couple of those. First, in the event of, you said you want students all around the campus to come together based on their beliefs and form a group where they can talk about or, you know, work on their beliefs. And honestly, I think there's less distance between you and us on that matter than you think. You know, honestly, I have no problem, you know, I'm an Orthodox Jew. I have no problem with, you know, me and a couple of my Orthodox Jewish friends getting together, talking about our religious beliefs, about our experiences, etc. But what I do believe is discriminatory is for us to take student money and then use that money but not allow other people to then join our group. This is a Cornell community. This is not a community of people that can then break away using each other's money and discriminate against one. And so I think that's the issue that I have. You mentioned that, you know, groups should be allowed to get together and not include people that they disagree with. The current wording of the non-discrimination clause, how this resolution still forbids that from happening. You cannot prevent someone from membership in an organization for any other reason that they did not
involve.
All that this resolution is adding is making sure that the same people who can belong to an organization, who can be members of an organization, can also have the full right of being a member of an organization. So I think that's the issue. And then just one more point. You said you wanted to impose our values on others. No, that is incorrect. You don't want to impose anything on anyone, but I don't want anyone else imposing anything on me. So I think the point is that, you know, if these organizations want to get together and do whatever they want to do on their own time, God bless them. But if they want to do it with student money and say that other people can't do it with them, that's where I draw the line. And so I think that people do need to take up our votes, and that's what I think they need to think about, student money.
Representative Desai.
Okay, so I'd like to reiterate a couple of the ideas that Vice-President Basil represented along with some of the ones that Representative Manager chose. So, you know, like Vice-President Basil said, a vote no on this resolution is not a vote for discrimination. And I'd just like to reiterate that as strongly as I possibly can. That should resonate with all of you. You know, just a couple of points that Representative Manager brought up. He didn't have a problem with groups getting together and, you know, voicing their radical views and talking about them and having them and having their children as a group. But he didn't have a problem with giving money to them and allowing them to
participate. Yeah.
But to me, that's not what I envision as discrimination. Like, to me, discrimination is saying if you have a specific view or you have a specific ideal, you're not allowed to exist, or you're not allowed to show that view. It's like, you know, I kind of don't have to tell my military where you're not allowed to voice the view that you have. But that's not what our motion is. Our motion is to allow us to have that view, but not impose it on other people. So if I'm a Christian who's homosexual, and I want to go to, you know, that very conservative Christian meeting and voice my opinions of how homosexuality can be involved in the Christian religion, I'm still allowed to do that. There's no way a group can restrict you from coming to a meeting and voicing your opinions, but then requiring that group to accept those views, I think it's just as imposing on that group and not allowing that person to come would be imposing on that person's right to voice their opinion.
All right. Next up is community member Larry Lynn. And, step up, please. And while we're debating here, a reminder from Parliamentarian Cohen to please try to limit your comments to the content of the resolution and not to attack the views of other members. Go ahead. 2 minutes.
First of all, again, thank you for everyone just bringing this issue to the table because, as well as most of you, we have a very high standard for diversity. I do a great acceptance of diversity as well. And I would like to argue that because of diversity, for the sake of diversity, we must not pass this resolution. I'm arguing that not only are we just back to that state, but diversity is something that's great because of this resolution. Diversity, I believe, will not simplify by forcing people together, but that we are formed as a model of that diversity gets simplified by allowing persons to go in a different direction. And it's not a lot of diversity. You must use this money to fund social organizations that create diversity. How do different organizations ensure inclusion and distinction? Promote diversity. I found the best way to ensure that the leaders are pursuing uniqueness and distinction. If leaders represent the same organization, and if leaders cannot tell the standard of the organization or the ideal of the organization, then I believe that the identity of the student organization itself is at stake. So we got it. Because diversity, university student organizations must have these distinctions, and because of that, leaders should have distinction. So I'm all for encouraging people to join whatever organization they feel comfortable with joining, but it's a matter of position. I think that's a very simple matter. Thank you.
Thanks. Vivi Kumar.
Yeah. So, first of all, I think I emailed around an amendment proposed by a constituent, Mike Wacker. So what I want to do is, in a second, I want to let you go ahead and say the resolution, the amendment. I'll sponsor it, and then, you'll get 2 minutes to sort of defend it. I don't know if I'm in support of this amendment or not, but I do want to have a conversation, right, and put it on the table. So if you'd like to go ahead and read the amendment, I'll sponsor it, and then you get 2 minutes to... Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah, you don't have to read all of the rationale. You can just go ahead. Yeah.
So the amendment would be going off the end of the resolution. It would go, members of the IO have a right to associate for the purposes of engaging in those activities protected by the First Amendment. Speech, assembly, petition for the redress of grievances, and the exercise of religion. The non-discrimination clause only applies when it requires no changes in the IO's creed and imposes no restrictions on the IO's ability to exhibit ideologies or philosophies different from those existing members.
So I'm going to move that amendment and ask for a second. There's a second.
Is there any dissent?
No, so now open up discussion on this and let him 2 minutes.
Okay.
Defend it.
So, sure. So we'll open it up right now for debate. And so we'll be debating only this amendment, not the resolution. And you can speak right now.
For 2 minutes.
Before I speak, first of all, I would like to thank our representative Mark for... We have gotten the right to ensure tough courts can discriminate based on gender, height, and weight to affect athletic skills. We have gotten the right to ensure courses and global clubs can discriminate based on gender to achieve a certain global rating fall. But all those frequent religions listed in the First Amendment, what lengths have we got to ensure, for example, that a Muslim student group can exclude Christians or vice versa? Many are focused on the balance between the First and 14th Amendments. But one can only wonder how a resolution can achieve this balance if it does not even reference the First Amendment. While I oppose this amendment to establish this balance, it would be wrong if it was described as my own, as I rely not on my own limited wisdom, but the tremendous wisdom of our nation's highest court. Except for substituting the term my own where appropriate, the language comes directly from Robert C. United States J.C., a unanimous Supreme Court decision. Under their limit, for example, the Cornell Republicans exclude Democrats and vice versa. But neither would be allowed to include women whose gender is unrelated to political philosophy. In fact, the court ruled in Robert C. United States J.C. that the J.C.s were guilty of discrimination, as many women and members were not permitted to discriminate against preferred views. As another example, one of the mob students tried to become members of the Black Students United in order to dissolve their organization. You may consider this situation hypothetical, but at Central Michigan University, many liberal students took advantage of a clause preventing political discrimination to become a member of the conservative Young American Foundation for the sole purpose of resolving it. Now, in this scenario, many students cannot discriminate on the basis of race and admit only black members. But even if it could, doing so would exclude non black allies or the case of LGBT groups, straight allies. If the amendment passed, however, CSUs could discriminate based on ideology and philosophy back against the sacred ideal, while preserving the dedicated members of all races. As for many people, one could make numerous arguments that language is
motion to suspend.
Motion to suspend by 30 seconds.
And it would be endlessly accessible from there. However, I remain convinced that one thing describes commitment, Winston Churchill would describe democracy. The word option, until you consider all the other options that have been tried. As the Supreme Court said in Joseph B. Tucker, the vigilant protection of constitutional freedom is nowhere more vital than the communities of American citizens.
All right, thanks. I'll give the sponsors of the resolution 1 minute to reply. And keep in mind, this is a new speakers list now, so if you want to get on to talk about this amendment, please use your hands.
This is the third time we've been here. The first time I presented you a resolution which would protect those groups that went to leave. Now, I deliberately, and with thought and care, amended that resolution last week so that it would cover all student groups. Now, what this amendment would do is pretty much make this resolution useless. It was ripped apart. And as for the idea that our groups, as a result of this amendment, would face hostile takeovers from other groups, ludicrous.
Not only would this amendment take group out of the park from underneath what the FAA had, I think, unanimously last week, but it would actually undermine the current language of the non-discrimination clause by allowing groups to not only discriminate against members for full rights membership, but also members in general.
What are you referring to what we passed unanimously?
The amendment to the resolution that the FAA passed now.
Okay. Yeah. Representative Rackles.
Hi. I just wanted to talk, and I was going to say this on the original one, too. I do not support this amendment to the resolution. There's a couple reasons. First of all, the Supreme Court case that you referenced is one of a general body of First Amendment right for free speech. Except the thing is, there are tons of Supreme Court decisions that involve free speech within educated communities. So that includes universities, schools, private institutions, public institutions. Here at Cornell, we're both private and public school institutions. However, there are a lot of cases, especially ones involving the rights of students to free speech, that the Supreme Court has decided they've decided basically that students don't have the right to say whatever they want when they want, and they don't have the right to extreme free speech because that goes against the mission of the educated community. That's what I feel resolution from Andrew Brockman and Representative Ganther is trying to do. They're trying to show that we don't support discriminatory practices, and it actually takes away from our educated freedom of speech. And the fact that if you say to someone that you can't have a community where you can join any club, that actually hinders all the educational purposes in our private institutions here at Cornell. So I go against this amendment because this isn't real life. This is Cornell community, and we're here to protect every single student on the Cornell campus, and one of those ways is to eliminate any discriminatory practices. The fact it's not just about Chi Alpha, it's not just about white students trying to take over a black student organization. First of all, if you have any belief in any students at Cornell University, I find that offensive, because I believe it's our job as students to support each other. And if you think that our university is that closed-minded that we're going to take away from other students' organizations, I think that you really shouldn't support Cornell University as a whole, because we're founded on non-discriminatory practices. This resolution is to further enhance this and make sure that no student ever feels the need to be discriminated against and not be able to have anything to do against it. So I don't believe in this amendment at all.
Yeah, I mean, I can see where this amendment is coming from your perspective on the resolution itself. And not to go into the specific resolution currently at this moment as we're debating the amendment, what I do not like about this amendment is how it essentially grants the groups a way to exclude individuals. And I think the entire concept of being able to, say groups, yes, you can exclude people, you know, is one that exists on campus, but I don't think we should spell it out in this document. I think that we should take these exclusion debates on a case-per-case basis to reflect the reality of the situation, to reflect the reality of our mission as a university, and our mission of teaching and promoting inclusion within, you know, open hearts, open minds. So I do not think this amendment would benefit this document, the proposed resolution by Brockman and Danzer. That being said, I don't think I support the resolution currently on the table, and I don't support
the amendment
yeah. because of this idea that we're creating a specific right to exclude when I think the mission of our university is open hearts, open minds, inclusion. That being said, I think the reality of the situation is that, yeah, students are excluded, but we need to take on a case-for-case basis and not give this vague, open-worded exit.
There's been a motion to... Actually, you can't do that because you're not on the speaker's list. That's right. Representative Smith.
Because they wanted to talk about the resolution, but I guess.
Representative Purdy. Representative Gitlin.
I also don't think that this amendment should be included. I think there's too much discrimination, there's too much racism in the world already, and if there's anything that the elected student body should do at this university, it should be to promote tolerance. And I think that Representative Brockman and Danner's resolution does just that. I'd like to call the question.
There's been a call to question. Is there a second? There's a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we'll now go ahead and vote. Let's take a hand vote on this. All in favor of the amendment, which I'm sure you all have a copy of, please raise your hand. One. All against the amendment. Two. Thirteen. Abstentions? Two. Okay, so by a vote of 1 to 13 to 2, the amendment fails. Thank you. Now we're going to go back to discussion. Now we'll resume discussion and debate of the entire resolution, and next on speaker list is Representative Smith.
Okay. I have a few. I don't remember. I don't speak that often.
When you say that the full right membership, doesn't that mean that there are automatically eligible to resist resistance?
Well, it means that you can't discriminate against members on account of epilepsy when determining the right to be paid.
Okay. Okay, well, here's the non-discrimination clause before the number of issues that have not received the petition in the past that probably you should. First we have the issue of how to protect all people from discrimination. And then we have this conflict between religious freedom and gay rights, and there's this issue of allowing an organization to receive public funding if it has discriminatory practices. And there are moral issues here that most of us are probably facing. And so how are we supposed to protect the LGBTQ community with the 14th Amendment, and then at the same time protect the religious freedom of others with the First Amendment? Is this a big question. And I'm trying to look at this perspective of the law that my moral conscience is going all over. I won't get into Supreme Court because I'm sure we've all had enough of that, but it's pretty obvious to me that there's probably going to be no middle ground on this issue. And I have to wonder, I can't help but wonder why would place yourself in a position like that, knowing that you do not agree with the beliefs of the group. Now, also I have to think, as a black male, you know, how would I think if the KKK was receiving public funds, which it is, what would I say to them? You have to allow me to join your group and let it vote me as Klan leader. That's a beautiful organization, and, you know, that if I believe everything he said, then they hate me. I question why he would do that, but I think that, like I said, it's a great way because you're talking about religious choice. So, I don't know. The bottom line is, I support the resolution for the event.
The resolution, you mean?
Resolution.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. But I still think the wording in some certain areas, I could point it out to you exactly what I feel like. Some people go, I'm going to touch it. So, bottom line is, I will support it. But then, you know, if a group is using public funds, they have to be allowed to.
All right, thanks. And if anyone has any amendments, they can go ahead and present them. I'll give you 30 seconds to respond to his question about... Yeah, I think this is an issue everyone, including the audience, has resolving, I guess, the issue between the First and 14th Amendments.
Right. Well, I think this is different from...
Next is community member Danielle D'Ambrosio. You'll have 2 minutes. Being recognized as an independent organization,
right?
So
that involves the right to the rooms and
advertising. As an organization,
right.
Yeah.
Is necessary. Also, the state was not on the ask to come back into leadership after accepting them for the island, and knowing that we were gay, because we knew we were for that issue, we were gay, and somehow we were pushing them, and we were on leadership for 3 years on that moment. I have no problem with allowing any way to be able to characteristic to attend a kayak meeting, to come, you know, be involved in groups. However, this isn't about membership, this is about leadership. But a part of it is not allowed to share continuity of mind, behavior, or fears, you rob them of purpose. If you cannot get the people that make the decisions for the group to be of more mind and more purpose, you do not have a group of purpose. You say you want to protect all students on campus from any kind of discrimination, but that's not the mission of the region. You are not all community organizations. In fact, any organization with a set of beliefs that they cannot hold their beliefs if they're one of the main reasons. And that's one of the key points that you would say.
Thank you. Representative Brack. VP Andrews.
Yeah, so I guess I still have questions based on... So who's going to be enforcing this resolution?
Well, this would be a student activities office policy. So, as you saw, I have a controversy with the SAMC, which rules and adjustments, and
the other is this a set guideline? Is this the guidelines in writing? So is there an oversight committee to review this resolution? Can the SAFC revoke the recognition of a student or student organization on campus? Point of Ari, can you answer that? Can an SAFC revoke the student group's recognition on campus, or is it just funding? For clarification. But the
The student activities office then could determine whether a group is, you know, recognized as a dependent or independent organization, and the SAFC is limited to funding only those groups. So basically, tonight, whatever. But can individual students can reserve rooms?
I'm not sure about that.
No.
Okay.
I still have a few more questions. So I guess, I'd just like to continue on this train of thought on, I completely understand where this resolution is coming from, and I completely support the idea of diversity on campus, but I feel like we don't know the consequences that this resolution could lead to. There doesn't seem to be very much of a framework for applying this non-discrimination clause. If I remember correctly from, using the Chi Alpha is, I guess, a motivation for this, but I don't like the idea of writing a resolution to, I'm not going to address that, but you know, I still feel like there's an element of vagueness, there's an element of lack of understanding for the consequences that this resolution could cause. I fear that if you know, we get a certain person in the student activities office who holds one set of beliefs, that they'll use this very broad, I mean, or this type of wording to actually reduce the amount of difference and the amount of inclusion that we want on this campus. And I guess, you know, it's a tough issue to deal with, and Rockman and I salute you to try to deal with these, but because there's this vagueness that's attached to this resolution and this lack of understanding. I mean, do we even know if President Scorton's going to sign this resolution?
We haven't known if he's going to sign any resolution.
But what are your thoughts? Do you think he's going to sign it? Or
first of all, I don't think that's right. I think that I'm not reaching for something that's totally unable to get. I mean, we're talking about, I went to President Scorton the other day at the University of Denver meeting. Hey, listen, you know, I'd like to talk to you about this resolution I'm working on. I think it'll be good. I just don't want to have this back and forth while I pass. And he said that. And then he said, listen, that's the way it works. I mean, when I apply for a Scholastic journal for that, I get rejected all the time. And, that's the way it should work. We should push, not for what we think will just get by. You know, if I wanted that, I would keep the resolution we had 2 years ago. I want to push for what the students want. I think that's what I've
got. All right. Well, we don't know the consequences of the resolution.
Yeah, I just want to clarify something. You know, when you're voting, you shouldn't really have any regard on what President Scorton will have to say about this resolution. As Andrew said, he'll vote either way. I mean, you know, vote to approve or disapprove, and then he'll provide us with a rationale, and then he'll come back to us. Community member Tamron.
Again, second.
Stop.
It's not a matter of religious versus gay rights, but a matter of freedom of groups to approve the community. Our campus really values open-minded, but we can't be so open-minded that we let our voting go. This whole discussion is being framed so that you'll feel that if we vote against this resolution, that we're voting for discrimination, but that's just not true. Every group, religious or otherwise, needs to be able to approve the leaders, and needs the leaders to have the same core values. And other things can differ, but if you don't agree with the core values of the group, then how can you possibly do
some of the shared core values?
As Matt Dander is aware, we're both members of DASH, part of the Gay Straight Alliance in general. I love Cristiano, I just talked to him last week, but I don't feel like we're here with a violation of his rights. When he decided that he no longer agreed with the core perspective of Chi Alpha, there was no reason for him to continue being. He was leading a Bible study, and the group Chi Alpha believes that the Bible is inerrant, that every word of it is the word of God. If he no longer believes that, how could he lead them in a Bible study? It no longer makes sense. It would be the same if I joined the Muslim Association at Cornell. I could do that, but I'm a Christian. If I came in there with a full core percentage, I couldn't be a leader in that group. They couldn't kick me out of the group, but I no longer believe the core values of that group. It's the same if I joined the Albino Association at Cornell. I could be a part of the group, but I cannot lead them because I really don't know what they're doing. I'm not an Albino student. And in 2004, Gallaudet University, the School of the Deaf, they were getting a new president who was not deaf for the very first time. They were not happy about that. They felt like she could not identify with them, that she didn't know the same core values that they did. And they ended up protesting until they got a president. They felt like that they could move. We need to be able to move our leaders as groups as any group on campus, not just religious groups in general.
All right, thank you. Representative Walsh.
Yep.
Go ahead. You want that?
Okay, so I have a proposal before I do. I have a couple
of questions.
So, Vince, you asked a question about the SAC stuff, and my candidate is not here to get the bylaws. Because there's nothing that has directly restricted that restricts this other than eligibility under the SAO. As far as what I actually believe about the last year, So, you know, that being said, we were Filipino, but we didn't have completely confused there.
Really?
On the flip side of that, you know, I was a Democrat and I went to the Republican Club under this resolution, and they did an exception to the member of the executive board. I detected that they were discriminating against me because of my views, which I don't think is right. You know, like I said earlier, I think it's imperative that people be able to come to a group and voice their opinion. But that being said, I don't think being able to be appointed based on those views is a right that's entitled to all people. So the resolution that I'd like to propose for the amendment I'd like to propose is changing the wording after so when determining membership and when to terminate, and I'd like to change this to and then determining the right of membership to attend a meeting or seek a position within the IO. So in essence, I think, you know, based on your views, whether you agree with membership or not, you should be able to apply for a position for the executive board. That's the right that should be given to all people. Whether they give you a position based on those rights isn't entitled to, in my opinion, based on the views that any of the community members that you're
run that by us one more time. So when determining full rights of membership.
So not full rights. So
so you're taking out full.
Yeah. So and when determining the rights of membership to attend a meeting or speak a position within the IO. So those are the two rights that I feel that members are entitled to. Or
to attend a meeting and seek a position.
Or
seek a position. Yeah, so when does
the right of membership to attend a meeting or speak a position within the IO?
Okay.
Is he striking that whole bold
part? Yeah, so are you striking out everything following the membership, which shall include but is not limited to taking all that out? No, just say, are you removing which shall include but is not limited to that part? Yeah. Yeah, okay. Okay. Now, this amendment has to be seconded. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a second. And now we'll open up the speaker's list again about this amendment, and BP Basil's first.
So, essentially on this issue, I think it's just very difficult for me to pass judgment. I think, as all of us have said, one way or the other, because, you know, there is this conflict between different belief systems, and essentially what R44 has forced upon us is for us to put some sort of ordering on different beliefs that really, on the whole, I'm just not comfortable with doing in any way whatsoever. So I don't think that I think that Representative Desai's amendment, it's very difficult for me to say whether it makes it better or worse, because I think the fundamental situation is pretty bad either way. So, I mean, I would really recommend, I'm not going to call the question, but I'd like someone else to quickly. I'd like us to vote this up or down. I don't really care either way. But I'd like us to end discussion on this resolution overall. And really, I think forming some sort of committee with CRW, with LGBT community, with other interest groups, to actually explore this issue in depth in a way where we can kind of try to tease out some of these difficulties between discrimination and freedom of expression, freedom of association, First Amendment rights. I think that this issue is much more nuanced than R44 gets at all.
All right. Do you have something to say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, as for seeking the right to seek a position within the IO, I mean, we have seeking in there. I think that you should have the right not to be discriminated against because of sexuality. Personally, I don't think being homosexual is just a view. I don't think it's just that's my idea. I don't think being a heterosexual is a type of religious practice. And as for let's just vote, get this over with, I think this is an important issue that we're talking about. And I've been in contact with with people within CURW. I've been in contact with
33
office. It's been 3 weeks.
All right. Next up is Representative Gitlin, and I'm cutting speakers' time down to a minute, so be brief with you. Go ahead.
Regarding what a community member said and Andrew said earlier, I think unions have a certain ability to empathize or stand in solidarity with other people. They don't necessarily have to be carving copies of each other to hold similar beliefs or to hold similar viewpoints on issues. And I think if you were to go around to different independent organizations on campus and you took surveys of all the members in the organization, you'd see that not all their viewpoints stack up on everything.
Yeah.
And I think to bar someone from entering an organization, maybe one of the times their worldview is different, it isn't right.
Representative Smith. If I can just clarify something, and if anyone wants to correct me, please do so. I think within the contract of independent organizations, they already can't exclude students from just general membership. So in many respects, you know, that part about membership is superfluous. But yeah, go ahead.
Great. So,
thanks, Bob.
So I think this actually does need to be reviewed in depth a lot more people. We need to focus on maybe the most. So I really think this is
all right. We'll move on to the next speaker. Representative Brown. Sure.
Currently, is it a case-by-case basis?
About? Any student who feels discriminated against can file a complaint with the university ombudsman or talk to the dean of students or anything like that. Yeah. Go.
So, I mean, we're really not just voting about thinking about this. We spent more time discussing this resolution than anything I can remember in my time in assembly. We're making a very big deal about adding like 10 or 15 more words to this, and I really don't see how it's very much different from the rest of what's set into place already. If we're talking like this is some kind of like, crusade against discrimination that universities are overlooking and ignoring, like, what's the difference between gender identity, gender expression? What's the difference between religion, religious belief?
We're still talking about the amendment, though.
We're talking about what?
The amendment.
Amendment. Yeah. Or we're just adding a couple more words to the amendment. You go to the start, you can add 50 more words to this resolution, but you know, it's very difficult to label discrimination. I think there's nothing said in allowing discretion in some kind of situation like this. If you're not just adding a couple more words,
it's not
even discussing this resolution, and we're not voting on it. So I really don't know what to do. For time purposes, maybe we should just table it indefinitely.
Again, this is we're limiting the discussion to the amendment. VP Kumar.
So I'm going to call into question in a minute, but I do want to echo something that Representative Rao said, which is that, you know, the difference between the amendment on the table just changes voting for, seeking, and holding to essentially the voting for and seeking, right?
And that's what we'll see.
Right, but which shall include, but is not limited to. And we're including voting, we're including seeking, we're just not including holding, right?
There's no voting.
So it's just seeking?
To attend and seek.
To attend and seek. Okay. All right.
How can they seek a position?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the original language is excellent in the sense that, you know, again, this isn't a question of the larger issue of discrimination or whatever. We're voting on a very narrow piece here, as Representative Rao said. And that is, you know, whether we extend this idea of what's already barred by the university, whether we're extending that from being, you know, an issue of membership to an issue of leadership. So what we're voting on really is very, very narrow. So I'm going to go ahead and call it to question. I'm against the amendment, so I'm going to go ahead and call it to question on the amendment.
All right. Let's take a hand vote. All those in favor of the amendments, please raise your hand.
One, two, three.
All those against?
One, two,
10. Abstentions. So by a vote of 3-10-4, the resolution, the amendment, 5, the amendment failed. So now we're back on to debating the resolution. Next on the speaker's list is, that's my brow. Yep. Got a minute. There's, okay, so we'll, yeah, so anyone who wants to vote, there was a second. So now we'll vote to table.
Yeah. Vote to vote. Whether we vote?
No, we'll vote to table.
I think we vote to vote.
Okay, there is debate on this motion, and then you can vote on whether or not to get rid of the motion.
Okay, so now we're going to debate whether we want to table this resolution. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I be the first person?
No, he will, and call to question us. Okay, let's vote. All those in favor of tabling this resolution indefinitely, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All those against?
We need a majority of people. 4, 6, 7, 8.
And abstention? So by a vote of 7-8-2, the motion to table fails. Now we're back to debating the resolution. Representative Gitlin. What?
I think we should all vote right now. So I have a motion to vote.
Second.
There's been a close question, and there's second. Is there any dissent?
2 minutes.
Yep, 2 minutes. Before the clerk calls the roll, I'm just curious as to what the sentiment in the audience is. This isn't going to count for anything, but I'd like to know what you guys think of this. All those in favor of this resolution in the audience, if you can raise your hand. And all those against? All right, great. So, Allison, will you please... Sure. How many are from the same organization? All right, now, okay. Yeah. Thanks. Allison, will you please call the roll for the vote?
No. No. No.
He doesn't vote. Did he?
No.
No.
He didn't give it to...
Yeah, but tell him.
He's not here.
Right.
Let's hope I don't have a second and then you lost.
Thanks.
Yeah,
I'm good.
Sorry, whose vote? Mine, yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Pass. I mean, I don't vote. Glass.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. Wow. I'm gonna vote yes. Alright. Alright, what time? Sam. Resolution 43, defining the general roles of college representatives. It's been a call to question.
Dissent.
And there's dissent, so do you want to explain the dissent?
Yeah, I just think we need to debate this a little bit.
Yeah, I'm wrong.
Yeah, which one? Which one?
43. Resolution 43. Okay, we'll just continue debate. Sorry, I didn't announce the official results of the previous resolution. The vote was 9-8-2, so the resolution passed, yeah. Representative Nicoletti.
I can talk about 15.
All right, there's been a call to question by Representative Desai, so we're going to vote to vote. Okay, he's done. Okay. Who else is on the speaker? Any motion?
All right, I'll call the question.
There's been a call to question and a second is there Desai. On Resolution 43, man, where are you?
Huh?
Yeah. We're now voting to vote. Can we have a hand vote? Who would like to vote? Please raise your hands. Raise your hands, guys.
We're voting to vote.
Yeah. All right. All those against? All right. We're going to go ahead and vote on Resolution 43. We'll take a roll call for that since it's legislation. Go ahead.
Pass. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Say again? Moreno? What's the count? By a vote of 15-0-1, the resolution passes and meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. If you have your...
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.